Back to the second hour of the Friday afternoon show. That was The Feeling with Love It When You Call. And before that, we had James Brown with I Feel Good. 12 minutes past two here, and we are delighted to welcome our very special guest, Becky McGregor. Hello.
Welcome, hello. Becky.
Welcome. Hello, and thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Always delighted to welcome anyone from the hospice. And I know Alex has got questions, so we better get started,
We've kind of worked on it together, haven't we?
Fire away, Alex.
Okay, right. Yeah, it's good to have you in the studio, Becky. Right. So my first one is, how did your career start with Mountbatten?
Oh, wow. It was back in 2004, believe it or not.
Right.
So I grew up on the Isle of Wight and at 18 went off to train to be a physiotherapist.
Okay.
And I left the island saying, I'm never coming back here again.
Right.
Probably like many young people do. I was off to the big city.
And wanted to explore something bigger.
Definitely. And I loved my time in London. Mm-hmm. So I trained as a physiotherapist up at University College London and then lived in London for about 13 years. Had my children in London. And I guess the Isle of Wight called me back a little bit over time. I think as the children were growing up, most of my family were still on the island. And on a very hot day like today, what I never really realised, I always thought I'm missing something.
Yeah.
Actually, it was the sea.
Yeah.
And being by the sea. By the sea.
I've got a real theory that if you're a sea person, you have to live near it. You just have to.
Yeah.
And it's lovely living by the sea, isn't it?
It is. Absolutely is. Yeah. And I still, at the end of a day's work, love getting down to the beach and swimming and just pottering around and listening to the waves, really.
Yeah. It's a lovely island to live on.
It certainly is. But it took me quite some time to get back into island life, having been in London for 13 years. I think, you know, it's a different pace, although dare I say in my current job, the pace is probably more than when I was in London. But I agree to love being back here.
Yeah.
And we moved here, really, and the only physiotherapy job at the time was in the hospice. Now, I'd never been into a hospice before, so I wasn't really sure what to expect when I went for my interview. And it was a part-time pace. My children were just at preschool and just started school. So it was the perfect sort of job, really. And I guess, over the years, I thought I'd be at the hospice maybe a couple of years or so. And, you know, it was a stepping stone to something else. But what actually happened was the hospice massively got under my skin in so many different ways, professionally. And there was much for me to learn around, you know, how to adapt.
You learn so much, don't you?
Skills, in a hospice setting. Yeah. And, you know, what I loved was enabling people to, you know, live as, you know, a quality of life as long as possible. So I loved doing that role. But also, on a very personal level, I've had my mum and my brother-in-law both died in the hospice.
Oh.
And so I guess I've seen the other side of it as well. And probably I'd always say that's where I've learned the most. Really understanding what it feels like to be a family member and the incredible care and support. I remember one of our clinical nurse specialists coming into my parents' home and saying, Becky, you need to be a daughter now and not a carer. And, you know, it's how the teams kind of come in and support you and put that wrap around care. It's phenomenal. So there
I would absolutely echo that. The allowing somebody to step back into their relationship rather than being the carer is so important.
Yeah.
And for me, that when my father was looked after, the fact that every single day, not only did they care for him, but they checked in on me. And that was so appreciated.
The work the hospice do is just incredible. I mean, I've had cancer in the family and the hospice have been just outstanding, just incredible. I mean, my my nan was in hospice many, many years ago. And then my gran's partner passed away in the hospice as well with lung cancer. Yeah. So, yeah, they've just been absolutely incredible.
I think it's likely that there isn't a family on the island that hasn't been touched in some way. I think that's what's so remarkable in our community, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. And Nick, that's so true.
Yeah.
You know, I go about my job day in, day out and hear stories from so many people across the community who've been touched by the work. And, you know, it's those small things often
of course
that
it
people
is.
Say
yeah.
are the things that they really appreciate, those small little acts of kindness. Of course, there's clever drugs and there's you know, managing symptoms well. Yeah. But very often it's the really small things that people remember. And it's the small things that really matter to people. Mm. That whole thing of someone being a real individual.
Yeah.
Not a patient, they're a person. Mm. They have a whole life and backstory. Mm. And that's so important to try and get it right for that particular person.
Yeah.
And indeed their family, their friends, their, you know, their loved ones around them. Mm. Really important.
I think it really sums up what we call person-centred care, doesn't it?
Yes.
That it is about, as you say, that individual and what they need right there and then.
Exactly, exactly. And you know, the teams, I'm so proud to work with a team that works like that, day in, day out. And they, you know, they're flexible and change what they're doing to, you know, make it work well for that individual person.
Because it's a difficult thing to plan, isn't it? And I know since Nigel's left, that's something as High Sheriff he's asking people to stop and think about.
Definitely.
Absolutely so important. But some people just can't have those conversations within the family of what do you want when the time comes? How do we deal with it?
Yeah.
And knowing that the hospice can, like you say, sort of turn it around really quickly for people and meet their wishes is just so, so important. Yeah.
There's always that balance, and I think we really see our work as the hospice at doing some of that earlier work as well around, you know, skilling people up to have those, you know, often really challenging conversations where they can. Now, sometimes people have very late diagnoses and that's that's not even possible.
That isn't possible, no.
My mum was diagnosed and died within 9 weeks, so it's a really short space of time and you're having to have quite quick conversations when you're really in the middle of it. But, you know, the High Sheriff's campaign and the work Nigel's doing and, you know, organisations working together across the island is so, so important because actually, if we can plan, when we do, we absolutely know the experience is so much better for people because, you know, in those moments of crisis, you've already had those conversations about what's important to you, where you might want to be, you know, what you want your funeral to look like. You know, I my children have to put up with me having those sorts of conversations now, you know, because for me, I have to role model that.
I think, though, what's important there is normalising those conversations. Yeah. And if we do that as a society, then it's not that kind of, oh, this is going to be really awkward, I can't have this conversation.
Yeah.
It's, you know, we don't shy away from talking about a new baby being born.
No.
Why do we shy away from someone leaving their life, you know, passing on? So I'm the same. We talk about the songs we'd like at my funeral and things like that. Absolutely so important.
And some of the customers that come into the shop, I mean, they come to us for a base, really, don't they?
The
comments we get are just incredible, outstanding, and the support we give them as well is just great.
Yeah, and actually our shop's a really good example of the hospice being on each high street on the island.
Yeah.
And, you know, I love going into our shops, actually. You know, our shop managers and the many, many volunteers who support in the shops. You know, you see that Mountbatten kindness in the shops.
You do.
As you do in the main hospice building, as you do with the teams who are going out into people's homes. And, you know, I've witnessed how utterly kind and they stop and take that time to, you know, really listen to that person who might be bringing in their loved ones, you know, clothes, having just cleared out the wardrobe after they've died. And, you know, so it's so important. We have incredibly special people who work right across our organisation.
I know that was something you were going to ask about, wasn't it, Alex, the volunteers, because you volunteered for 15 years.
Yes, I have. I've been with the hospice for 15 years. And one of my questions was, do you have much involvement with volunteers? With the volunteers, and what is your involvement?
Every day, Alex. Right. Every day. We've got, I've checked today, so this is data as of today.
Okay.
We've got 420 volunteers.
Wow, that is amazing.
And then we've got about another 80, 100 who help with fundraising events as well, and behind the scenes for fundraising bits. But we have volunteers who drive for us. They help in the gardens. Yeah. In fact, they keep our gardens beautiful. We have volunteers in the cafe, in our shops, on our reception, in our physiotherapy gym. We have people who come in with pet therapy dogs. We have volunteers on our inpatient unit, bereavement counsellors in our John Cheverton Centre, and Mountbatten neighbours who go out into the community. I may have missed something in that list, but our volunteers, we couldn't do what we do without our volunteers.
Couldn't run without the volunteers.
Absolutely not. We looked this year, when we celebrated Volunteers Week this year, I did some maths around if we paid every one of our volunteers national living wage, which, by the way, doesn't put the value on what they bring to the organisation. But it would cost us, on the hours that they do, over £700,000 a year. That would be what we have to find extra, just in terms of the money. The reality is, though, more than the money, the volunteers bring, you know, skills, experience,
life skills, and
you know, they're part of our community.
They are.
They represent our community, and you know, that is why it's so important to have our vast army of volunteers.
I have to say, one of my highlights of this year and of the heat wave was walking into the Isle of Wight Festival on the Sunday and all you could see were the Mountbatten umbrellas.
Yeah.
And I turned to my sister was visiting and I said, that is so brilliant because that means they've made loads of money.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. It
and I was
incredible.
So thrilled to see that because you see the sunflowers, but the sun had just brought out all those umbrellas. Yeah. It was amazing. And I think you had a record breaking year, didn't you?
We did. I think it was over 72,000. I'm now trying to remember off the top of my head, but over 50,000 of that, actually, I think it was in the 80,000s. Over 50,000 of that was on the Sunday, mostly umbrellas. And like you, Nick, I was at the festival this year as a, you know, just as a regular punter, but I do go and see all the volunteers and our staff who are selling. And it blew my world away seeing it. In fact, I went up on the big top, which I've never done, because I wanted to see an aerial view of those sunflowers.
And that would have been amazing.
It was so moving.
Yes.
It was so moving. Yeah.
Well, I now have, my sister bought one of the umbrellas, but she was flying back to Scotland and couldn't get it in her hand luggage. So it's now hanging proudly in my hallway.
What a shame.
Ready for next year.
Absolutely. Do you know what though, Nick? I buy one nearly every event I go to, so I have a little collection.
They're brilliant though, aren't they?
Absolutely excellent. Now, talking about fundraising, and there's been so much in the press over the last few years about funding to hospices, because for anyone listening who doesn't know, you are not funded by central government wholly, are you?
No.
They do fund a small percentage.
They do. They
but do. The rest is down to fundraising.
Yeah. So for every £10, £7 of that is raised by our amazing community, which is phenomenal. And, you know, every day I'm blown away by how the community supports us in a multitude of ways, really. And that's through volunteering, of course, because that, as we've just talked about, saves lots of money. It's people who are giving one-off donations, but, you know, people who are giving regularly, month on month, that's a really sustainable income stream for us. People play our lottery.
which is great.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Yeah. People go into our shops.
Yeah.
They donate quality clothing and goods to our shops. That's
the amount
really
of things
important.
We get donated. I mean, I see it week in, week out, and it's just incredible.
It is.
And I mean, I know coming from the voluntary sector myself, fundraising has only got harder in the last 5 years, hasn't it?
It really has.
And you've got an amazing team who we were always very jealous of, because they always had such great ideas. And we'd be like, oh no, the hospice are doing that. We should have thought of that. But the hard work that goes into that.
Absolutely.
And having to constantly think, right, well, we can't. Yeah. You know, there's certain things like Walk the White that every year, but every year it's also, what else can we do?
Exactly.
What can we do slightly differently?
Exactly.
So what are the challenges at the moment? Where are you at in raising that 70p in every pound?
Yeah, it's so it costs us about 10 million a year to run the hospice. And you're right, Nick, it's getting harder and harder.
Yeah.
I think, you know, we've tried to keep our budget around the same amount, but every year our staffing costs go up and our statutory funding never keeps in line and keeps pace with that. So that's really hard. And I think, you know, many of your listeners will have heard last year that we were looking at a really significant reduction in money. I mean, I'm, you know, we're fortunate that it has been nowhere near as bad as that, but we still have a shortfall. So we're...
That's at the point you were stepping into the role of CEO. Big shoes to follow after Mr. Hartley.
Yeah, absolutely.
But that must have been quite daunting.
Yeah, it was a baptism by fire, I think it's fair to say. So I think I accepted the role. The recruitment process started really early. So I accepted the role. And Nigel and I worked really closely together around that. And then, of course, when Nigel retired, I continued that work. So, you know, it's been about really building our relationships well with our NHS funders, working with them around, you know, what value does the hospice bring within the local health and social care economy? What do we do that saves people going into accident and emergency, for example, or being admitted to hospital?
That sounds so, so familiar. Prove your worth again and again, absolutely.
But really important that we are, you know, a really valued member of that wider system.
Yeah.
You know, no longer can hospices be a little island on their own.
They can't, can they? No, they shouldn't be. No,
they shouldn't be. So I think, you know, that's been tough for me coming into the role as a new CEO. I always say the two challenges in running the hospice, and it'll be similar with any organisation, it's the money and it's the people.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's about, you know, ensuring our biggest asset, our people, our staff and our volunteers are well looked after. You know, they love coming to do what they do because, you know, the job can be really tough at times.
I mean, I look forward to mine every week.
But that care for people when day in, day out, they're caring for others.
Yeah.
And the supervision and the support they must need.
Yeah.
And that in itself, again, you know, costs money to provide.
It
but
does.
It's so important.
And we're always looking at really creative ways of doing that. And I think, you know, we're just developing a new strategy at the moment. And our people is a real key part of that. And, you know, if anyone says to me, what keeps you awake at night, it is that sort of, what else can we be doing to really support our staff and volunteers well, so that they're the very best they can be to support our local community? So it's those two things as a CEO I'd say all of my time is spent on. And, you know, that's a real honour and privilege, but it's a massive responsibility as well.
I always remember, for me, because I worked in the voluntary sector, as you know, there were those moments sometimes where you'd go, that's why we do this job. And it would just be, it could be something quite small, something we'd manage to achieve for somebody. And I imagine it's probably the same. You just have those pinch me moments of, yes, this is why we do this. And obviously every day is important, but
Every day I have moments like that, to be fair, because you see that real human kindness day in, day out, whether that's one of our supporters who, you know, suddenly comes out the woodwork and supports us with a significant donation. To yesterday, I was at the Wing Walk at Sandown Airport and seeing people who were fundraising and getting up and strapped on an aeroplane, and I'm, you know,
crazy fools. I'd have just given you the money.
Yeah.
I know. I mean, I keep thinking, should I do that one? You know, I have done a few challenges in my time. That one, I'm not so sure about. But
I think your value might be being at work each day, rather.
Yes.
Maybe. Yeah,
doing
what
you do is your value. Yeah.
You're very kind. You maybe let me off that challenge.
I think so.
Walk the White was hard enough this year. It's the first year I'd ever done that. The whole walk without, dare I say, nearly enough training.
Yes, I think you probably were not alone there. Now, I suppose what I should say is, if people are listening and thinking, do you know what, I could volunteer there, what should they be doing? How should they get in touch?
So very much either go onto our page around volunteering on our website, or call our team, our people services team. You know, they will always talk you through kind of next steps. Yeah. We're always looking for volunteers in those multitude of areas that I talked about.
So. And so if you're listening, it's not about necessarily being on the wards or being, it could be fundraising, it can be so many different roles. Yeah. So if you've got a little bit of time each week, each month, start that conversation really and see what it is you could offer. Mm. Absolutely. Definitely. I'm afraid we're going to have to bring it to a close, but I am going to ask you to promise us to come back.
Yes.
Oh, I could
please come
to.
Back.
We could do a whole show.
Oh,
yes.
I'd love
talking
to.
About this. That would be amazing. So thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you,
Becky,
for having me.
That's okay. And so the Mountbatten website, mountbatten.org.
mountbatten.org.uk. Yes.
Really useful website as well.
Yes,
if you've got
it is.
Anybody
yeah.
in the family who's facing any difficulties, would thoroughly recommend it. I found it a great help. So there's lots on there. Right, we're going to have some music now, and